Sure, go ahead, Rick. We'll wait for you up there.
Don't tell Christy.
No problem. Major Commissar Zemyanin wasn't the happiest of SecMen. The message was unequivocal, signed in red ink with a scrawled, testy signature that had creased and nearly torn the paper. Marshal of Internal Security, Yosef J. Sieraski, one of the top-ranking officers within the party, and a man tipped when his turn came around and if he lived long enough for the supreme position of leader. Request denied. Insufficient evidence of any security risk. INTSEC forces will maintain normal holding and patrol patterns. If felt necessary, then descriptions of the three suspects, the word was heavily underlined, may be circulated on condition yellow, but no higher. There was a postscript in the marshal's own hand. Do not look for terrorists beneath every stone, Comrade Major Commissar. Moscow is not the Kamchatka. Zemyanin checked the phrase he wanted in his battered phrasebook.
Your advice is much appreciated, my dear sir, and I shall follow it to the letter.
He made sure that the door was firmly closed between his office and that of Elisa Andreevna. Then he stood up, face tight with anger, and walked to the window to look out over the bleak prospect toward the shapeless worm of the Moscow River. He pressed his lips to the glass.
May rat cancer rot them all. May their wives fuck pigs. May they fall with their asses bleeding fire. May their noses rot and... Aliyev.
The tracker could hunt a flea through a sandstorm.
I want Aliyev on 24-hour standby.
Yes, Comrade Major Commissar.
Zemyanin looked out the window again.
Get my vehicle ready from transport requisition. I'm tired of this stuffy office. I'm going out to taste the air and see what I can see.
Rick had recovered a little after a decent night's sleep. The twitching of the muscles in his arms and legs had eased, but he still complained of a pins-end needle sensation in his fingers and toes. And as they ate sparingly of their shrinking food supplies, he was clearly having problems swallowing. Twice he gagged on the strips of dried meat, reaching for the canteen to wash the blockage out. He managed a weak smile.
Sorry, guys. One of the problems with ALS is that it eventually hits all of your muscles. And that includes the ones that do the swallowing for you. Speaking gets tougher, too. Once I'm warmed up, I shouldn't be so bad.
It would take some time for any of them to become warm. During the night, the temperature had dropped sharply, and there was ice on the insides of the few unbroken windows in the house where they'd slept. When Ryan looked out across the bleak suburbs of Moscow, he saw a dusting of snow coating the surrounding roofs and chimneys. A small lake set among the trees on the far side of the road was covered by a gray sheet of ice. While Christy and Rick sat talking quietly together, Ryan climbed up to the elegant staircase to the top floor of the house and found a small room that faced northeast. The door stuck, and he had to set his shoulder to it. The lock snapped as it opened inward. The corpse that lay on the narrow single bed had almost certainly been there for 100 years. Untouched and undisturbed, the dry air within the room slowly turned the remains into a leathery, mummified length of brown sinews and pale bone. Ryan wasn't particularly surprised or even particularly interested. There were millions of houses throughout the Deathlands that had remained virtually undamaged by the nukings. The Russians had also been well supplied with neutron-type missiles, which slew the living but left all structures standing. In his life, Ryan had seen uncountable corpses like the one on the bed. The room contained little, a table in one corner, with a wad of folded papers supporting a broken leg, a few dust-dry Russian paperback books that crumbled in Ryan's fingers when he tried to open them, a vase holding some fragile dried flowers, a wardrobe, door ajar, revealing the ragged remains of the dead person's clothes, and two pairs of boots on the floor. Ryan picked one up, trying to guess whether the corpse had been male or female, but the boots were of an indeterminate middle size. A single golden ring glistened in the grisly remains of the right ear, and a cheap metal digital watch circled the left wrist. The person had been wearing blue jeans and a shirt of some sort. The skin had dried over the bones, tight, like stretched leather, and the skull lolled to the right, toward the door, as if the body waited patiently for a visitor who was a little late. On the floor on the far side of the bed was a white enamel bowl, stained and crusted, black around its bottom. Again, it was something Ryan Carter had seen many times before. A victim of neutron bombing, dying, guts torn, brain reeling, had crawled back to its lair to die. Retching, the victim had brought up blood and dark bile. He had been unable to eat, teeth loosened and bleeding gums. His sight had dimmed, and his skin had erupted. The bodily functions all failed. The empty, round bottle of dark green glass clutched in the skeletal fingers and the water glass on the bedside table told their own story of a last and merciful release from the endless suffering. Ryan looked out the window. The ground sloped toward what Rick had said was the Moscow River. It marked the inner ring of the old city. Beyond that, he could see a haze of smoke and a variety of buildings looming through it. Ryan tried to open the window, managing only a couple of inches, but the fresh air cleared away the musty smell of old dry death and replaced it with the scent of hundreds of wood fires as the citizens of the ville fought the last desperate troops of General Winter. They left the security of the house and began to move slowly through the streets, making sure they were well wrapped in their furs. Everyone else out and about that morning was dressed the same. Ryan's biggest worry was trying to figure out where they might find the tools they needed. He'd warned Rick that if the right opportunity came along, Ginsberg would have to risk his fragile Russian and ask some questions. By a stroke of good luck, their opportunity did come along in the shape of a stout, middle-aged woman pushing a baby carriage with odd-sized wheels. As she walked toward the three friends, one of the wheels simply rolled off, and the carriage lurched to one side, nearly tipping the red-faced infant onto the sidewalk. Ryan snatched the wheel as it bowled past him, stepping in quickly and smiling reassuringly at the woman. He prayed to himself that Rick was in at his heels to pick up any linguistic fastballs. Ryan saw immediately that a split pin hadn't been inserted properly, and it took only a few seconds to carry out the simple repair. The woman said something to him, but he didn't look up from the job. He heard Rick's voice speaking slow, halting Russian. Ryan straightened, steadying himself on Rick's shoulder.
Ask where we can find tools.
Have done. Now shut the fuck up, Ryan.
Ryan did so, and stood patiently with Christy, trying to prevent the woman from seeing his face too clearly without appearing to be actually hiding it. Eventually, with much nodding and smiling, the woman went on her way, the infant in the carriage gazing solemnly at the three strangers. As soon as she was out of earshot,
well,
What'd she say?
How the weather had taken a turn for the much colder.
Christy tapped him warningly on the cheek.
Come on, Rick. You know what we want to hear.
She said what pretty hair you had, Christy. Said she hadn't seen a color like that since... All right. But she was amazed at your stopping to help her with that broken wheel. I said we were strangers on a visit to the great city of Moscow that our fathers and our fathers' fathers had told us so much about. You know, that kind of stuff.
Good.
She started off on a long spiel about how in the old days, before what she called the long grayness, Moscow had been the center of the world.